This is Audible.
The Wonders of Walt Disney World. Written by Aaron H. Goldberg. Narrated by Susan L. Crawford. Produced by Audiovision Productions. The Wonders of Walt Disney World. Your guidebook for uncovering secrets, stories, and magic. Who is this book for? Anyone and everyone interested in Walt Disney World. If you're planning a trip and you've already purchased one of those really popular guidebooks, this book is a great companion and complement toward your planning and preparation to conquer and enjoy all Walt Disney World has to offer. If you're not in need of a guidebook and are a seasoned veteran of the parks, you'll enjoy this book as well, as there are quite a few lesser-known stories and details. Even the most well-versed Disney devotee will find entertaining and interesting stories about the most magical place on Earth. All too often, when we visit WDW, me included, we can't help but rush off to our first attraction, passing some very interesting and little-known backstories and remarkable details. The Wonders of Walt Disney World is going to guide you from park to park, resort to resort, across the entire Disney property, and point out the hundreds of magical details, secrets, and stories that Disney weaves throughout their parks. What this book is and is not. I hesitate to put one label on this book. Is it a guidebook? Yes, sort of, as I've included ratings from TripAdvisor.com for rides, resorts, and restaurants. Is it an interesting and informative resource about Walt Disney World? Without a doubt. Is it a book with tips, trivia, and secret stories? Absolutely. But let me explain a little further. The guidebooks for Walt Disney World aren't the most enjoyable reads, yet they do their job very well. They help you plan and organize months ahead of time and are densely packed with details about weather, statistics on wait times, and day-to-day plans to make the most of your time. The Wonders of Walt Disney World is loaded with details too, primarily in-depth details you won't find in the conventional guides I just described. So there won't be plans for days 1 through 7 during your week-long excursion at WDW. And I won't be crunching numbers to give you a statistical analysis about when to ride the Haunted Mansion. These scenarios are very useful for some folks, and not so much for others. If you like to wing it and don't need to plan every minute of every day, this is the book for you. You are on vacation, after all, and theoretically should be somewhat stress-free, without the underlying pressure to run from attraction to attraction. For some folks, there's something to be said for spontaneity and self-guided discovery rather than a pre-planned, week-long Disney boot camp experience. If you've never been to WDW, by the time you finish the book, you will have not only a great sense of where things are throughout the parks, but a healthy background and appreciation for the attractions themselves, or at least a feel for whether you should include a specific attraction during your visit. If you're a frequent visitor to the parks, this book will open up your eyes to the finer details that make your Disney experience that much richer. The Wonders of Walt Disney World includes many of the subjects the traditional guidebook touches on. You're going to find the list of attractions for each park, along with information about restaurants, height restrictions, shows, fireworks, parades, and maps. Basically, a comprehensive tour of the Magic Kingdom, Epcot, Disney's Hollywood Studios, Disney's Animal Kingdom, Disney Springs, as well as the resort hotels and restaurants. But I'm taking it one step further. I aim to give you a backstory on the backstory as we work our way through each and every Disney park, visiting all the popular attractions, highlighting the secrets and magic that make WDW so special. So, I guess, it's part guidebook, part secret stories, and part informative history. It should definitely be part of your preparation to make your visit to Walt Disney World that much more enjoyable. With all that said, wherever you are on the Disney horizon, I hope this book will be an enjoyable read. If you visit Walt Disney World weekly and feel as though you could author your own guidebook, feel free to skip the nuts and bolts guidebook aspect, which I purposely relegated to the end of each chapter. If you're totally new to the Disney experience, before you start the chapter on Magic Kingdom, you may want to jump to the back of the book and check out the appendix, where you will find some details necessary for your trip, such as Fast Pass Plus, Disney's Magical Express, Hidden Mickeys, the Photo Pass, and Disney's Magic Bands. Okay, now that some of the fine print is out of the way, a few last words from me, your author guide. As we travel through each park, there are lots and lots of details, facts, stories, and numbers. As someone who values and strives for absolute credibility and referenced material, here are a few words about where much of this information comes from. Obviously, a good portion of it you'll be able to observe for yourself when you actually get to the parks and start to look around. There are plenty of photos throughout the book when a comparison needs to be made, or if something is really noteworthy. Nearly all the facts pertaining to numbers, such as the height of something, how long something took to construct, and things of that nature, came from WDW News, the Walt Disney Company's fact, information, and press release website for the media and public. If I used something from a book, magazine, or journal, that is referenced where the quote or information is cited. Additionally, I would like to give a very big thank you to retired Imagineer Tom Morris for allowing me to ask him a few questions about the parks. More information about Tom's background can be found in the appendix. I was also fortunate enough to speak briefly with Joe Rohde, Senior Vice President Creative, Walt Disney Imagineering, and executive designer of Disney's Animal Kingdom, who was gracious enough to allow me to ask him a few things about Disney's Animal Kingdom. Lastly, while this book is published and updated annually, often Disney makes changes without notice, especially when it comes to menus and maintenance of an attraction. So, my apologies if what you actually encounter at the parks is contrary to what the book says. If the change is permanent, it will be reflected in the next edition. This information was accurate when it was published. Thank you for purchasing The Wonders of Walt Disney World, and I'll see you on Main Street, USA. Aaron H. Goldberg, December 2017. Introduction. Walt Disney had a dream that would revolutionize the way families vacationed and spent their free time together. To quote the man himself, "I felt that there should be something built, some sort of amusement enterprise built, where the parents and the children could have fun together." In July 1955, that dream was realized when Disneyland debuted in Southern California. Walt's park was such a success that folks from all over the world wanted him to replicate his Magic Kingdom in their hometowns. They even offered him free land in an attempt to lure him. About a decade later, and after much research, another Disney theme park was on the horizon. Many cities were on the drawing board as a potential landing spot. St. Louis came extremely close, and even the seasonal state of New York was entertained as a possibility. But Walt wanted warmth. Southern Florida had a shot for a brief moment, but ultimately, Central Florida, near a little sleepy town called Orlando, won out. On November 15, 1965, the world got what it wanted. A second Disneyland, or Disneyland East, as some people referred to it, was in the planning stages. Walt made the announcement at a press conference in Florida, and the state hasn't been the same since. Florida wouldn't be the home to a mere reproduction of Disneyland. Walt's aspirations for this project were grandiose and extremely ambitious. As he stated during the press conference, "We have many things in mind to make this unique and different from Disneyland. It's the biggest thing we've ever tackled." Sure, there was going to be a theme park on the property, but the Florida project was going to be so much more. Walt envisioned a city of the future on his land, one that would revolutionize and culturally change the way people lived, worked, and played. Unfortunately, most of those magical dreams Walt Disney envisioned for the more than 40 square miles of land he purchased in Central Florida would be nothing more than unrealized dreams. Roughly a year after the big land acquisition announcement, Walt Disney passed away, on December 15, 1966. Best-selling author James Patterson once said, "Dreams die hard, and sometimes they don't have to die at all." Waiting in the wings to ensure that not all of his kid brother's dreams died was Roy O. Disney. Roy was Walt's older brother, business partner, and confidant. As brilliant and creative as Walt was in entertaining the masses, Roy was equally astute and imaginative when it came to finding a way to finance his brother's wildest dreams. Roy and Walt set out on their entertainment journey during the 1920s, oftentimes not in lockstep, but they usually found a way for their partnership to work. Now, for the first time, Roy was flying solo. The Walt Disney Company was without its creative leader at the crux of a major project. Roy did what any big brother would do. He looked out for his little brother and built the theme park on the company's land in Central Florida. Under Roy's guidance and tutelage, the Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World came to fruition on October 1, 1971. As Roy O. Disney stated in his dedication on October 25, 1971, the park wouldn't be Disneyland East or Disneyland Part 2. It would be known as Walt Disney World. Walt Disney World is a tribute to the philosophy and life of Walter Elias Disney, and to the talents, the dedication, and the loyalty of the entire Disney organization that made Walt Disney's dream come true. May Walt Disney World bring joy and inspiration and new knowledge to all who come to this happy place, a magic kingdom where the young at heart of all ages can laugh and play and learn together. Dedicated this 25th of October, 1971, Roy O. Disney. Initially, Walt Disney World consisted primarily of the Magic Kingdom. As time progressed, the more than 27,000 acres of land evolved and grew. Epcot Center, later renamed Epcot, debuted on October 1, 1982. Next came Disney's Hollywood Studios on May 1, 1989. Disney's Typhoon Lagoon on June 1, 1989. Disney's Blizzard Beach on April 1, 1995. And finally, on Earth Day, April 22, 1998, Disney's Animal Kingdom. Within each of these magical places are countless hidden secrets and creative details that Disney crafted for your enjoyment. What may seem like an ordinary item often has more than meets the eye, be it a hidden Mickey or a hidden fire hydrant. So let's explore the happiest place on Earth and scratch just below the surface to see the fun and details that lie just out of eyeshot. Welcome to the wonders of Walt Disney World. Chapter 1. Magic Kingdom. I don't want the public to see the world they live in while they're in the park. I want them to feel they're in another world. Walt Disney. You've just traveled for several minutes along the highway in the sky in one of Walt Disney World's sleek monorails, or perhaps you've earned your sea legs and cruised the Seven Seas Lagoon in a boat or ferry. Or maybe you were chauffeured via a Walt Disney World resort bus. No matter how you got here, you're about to embark on a magical day and enter Walt Disney World's Magic Kingdom. From the moment you approach the entrance, you know you're on the cusp of something special, as you're about to be transported again, this time to several unique lands. Lands that, for the most part, originated from the imagination of your host, Walt Disney. As the world knows, Walt Disney was a storyteller with a penchant for perfection and detail. When Walt opened Disneyland in 1955, he set the ultimate stage for a story starring each and every person who visits one of his theme parks. Today, at Walt Disney World, just like at Disneyland, Walt's attention to detail has been cultivated and honed by the storytellers who helped to carry on his legacy, the Disney Imagineers. The name Imagineering Imagineer combines imagination with engineering. Utilizing Walt's schematic for Disneyland, the Imagineers created a magical kingdom that is immersive and all-encompassing. A living, ever-changing theater show featuring a lifelike set and background just for you, the star of the show. While everyone's experience and participation in the show at the Magic Kingdom may be different, there are numerous hidden nuances that are all around and consistent for every visitor. Many of these special and obscure details are hiding in plain sight, while some of them require a bit of thought or knowledge about the setting and story being told in order to appreciate them. Let's walk beneath the tracks of the Walt Disney World Railroad Station and soak up all that is Town Square, which then leads to Main Street, USA. As you leave your cares and worries behind and step onto Town Square, the first thing that may catch your eye is the color of the sidewalk. It's red. Weird, the sidewalks at home aren't usually red. Well, here in Disney's world, there can be many reasons behind the uniqueness of the object you're viewing. The red in this case is a specific color that was selected for a couple of reasons. The main reason is this shade shows up really well in pictures. The other reason is it makes certain colors, many in nature such as the green grass, look more vibrant. If you look at a color wheel, green and red are opposite from each other. If you don't like the technical aspect, think of it as part of the show. Walt and his Imagineers have rolled out the red carpet for you. Welcome to the kingdom. Once you get past the color red, turn around and notice the train station behind you. I know, it's very easy to have the urge to take off down Main Street and immerse yourself in the lands that await you, but this book is about appreciating and uncovering the secrets and details. So before we head down the street, there are a few things to notice about the Main Street Station, the Walt Disney World Railroad, and Town Square. Climb up the stairs and venture into the station. Notice the early 1900s decor, the authentic Nickelodeon against the wall, and the mutoscopes, which allow you to crank a wheel and watch a little moving picture show. These two pieces aren't the only thing at the station that are from the early 1900s. So are the trains. The Walt Disney World Railroad operates four authentic steam-powered narrow-gauge locomotives. The trains were built by Baldwin Locomotive Works of Philadelphia between 1916 and 1928. Before life at Walt Disney World, they hauled sugarcane for United Railways in Yucatan, Mexico. Disney disassembled them in Mexico and shipped them back to Tampa, Florida in 1969, where they were restored bolt by bolt. Since 1971, the Walter E. Disney, Walt loved trains, the Lily Bell, named for Walt's wife, the Roy O. Disney, named for Walt's brother, and the Roger E. Brogy, named for the Imagineer who led the railroad project at WDW, have welcomed guests all aboard for a 20-minute, mile-and-a-half ride around the Magic Kingdom, making stops at Frontierland and Fantasyland before returning to Main Street. But we're not taking the train today. We're going to walk back out of the station and grab a great bird's-eye view of the hustle and bustle of Main Street, USA. This view is usually a great opportunity to snap a pic or a selfie with the backdrop of Main Street and Cinderella's castle in the distance. After the obligatory selfie, note the flagpole in front of you. It's kind of hard to miss. Each day at 5 o'clock p.m., grab yourself a dose of some good old American patriotism and watch the flag retreat ceremony. The Pledge of Allegiance is recited, and the flag is lowered for the evening as a guest veteran assists. It's certainly something to see and appreciate. Note, just behind the flagpole is a great tribute to the man who made WDW happen, Roy O. Disney, who's sharing his bench with Minnie Mouse. Speaking of flags, take a look down Main Street, USA. Do you notice the American flags perched atop the buildings? Well, here's a little secret. They technically aren't American flags. As just mentioned, the American flag must be lowered each night according to the United States Flag Code, usflag.org. Since, logistically, this would be difficult for the cast members, Disney's name for their employees, at WDW to maintain each day and night, the flags don't have the traditional 50 stars and are therefore not in breach of the flag code. Instead, these flags are missing a few stars and may therefore fly day and night. This little tidbit also helps to sell the authenticity of Main Street, USA, since at the time Disney is trying to portray here, our country did not have 50 states or 50 stars on the flag. Alaska became a state on January 3, 1959, and Hawaii became one on August 21, 1959. Now, take a quick look to the left of the flagpole. You'll notice the fire station, which gives a slight wink and a nod to the number 71, representing the year Walt Disney World opened. We will see a lot of numerical nods to years relevant to Disney history throughout each of the parks. Just next to the fire station is the Harmony Barber Shop. Feel free to stop in and get a haircut. It's an actual working hair salon, offering haircuts for adults and children. Their specialty is first haircuts for children who've never received a haircut before. Now, looking to the right of the flagpole is Tony's Town Square Restaurant, serving Italian cuisine. The Hotel Saratoga in New York is the influence for the exterior design and theme here. As the story goes, this is where Lady and the Tramp shared their first kiss. Be on the lookout for paw prints outlined with a heart in the pavement outside Tony's. Now it's time to enter Main Street. Our first stop is adjacent to Tony's Town Square and attached to Main Street Confectionery. The Chapeau. Pop in and purchase a pair of those legendary Mickey ears. And before you leave, locate the old-timey phone on the wall. Pick it up and eavesdrop on a conversation. The gossip isn't juicy, but it's still a fun throwback to yesterday. Exit through the Main Street Confectionery and venture out into the middle of the street, being careful to not get run over by a stroller or scooter. You're finally here. Main Street, USA, a replica of an early 1900s town that could be found anywhere across this country back in the day. Main Street at Walt Disney World is similar to its predecessor, Main Street at Disneyland. The street is an amalgamation of Walt's own experience as a child living in Marceline, Missouri, and a town about 650 miles away, Fort Collins, Colorado. Walt tapped artist Harper Goff, who was raised in Fort Collins, to help recreate and bring his fondness and nostalgia for yesterday back to life. One can't help but notice how realistic and detailed the buildings are. However, there is a bit of an optical illusion at work here, something called forced perspective, which is basically a set building trick. Disney has mastered this technique, and it's on full display throughout Main Street. As you gaze upon the buildings, they appear to be taller than they actually are. In reducing the scale of the building as it grows taller and taller, the second floor would be smaller than the first, and the third would be smaller than the second. It gives the appearance of the building being farther away. For example, the Plaza Ice Cream Parlor has a first story height of 12 feet. The second story is 10 feet tall, and the third story is 8 feet tall. Since we're looking up at the buildings, what's the deal with the windows advertising businesses and people's names? Well, this is Disney's tradition of honoring folks who have been important to the Disney theme parks. As Jeff Heimbuch explains in the introduction to his book, Main Street Windows, Marty Sklar said, "The tradition of the Main Street windows was established by Walt Disney for Disneyland Park. He personally selected the names that would be revealed on the Main Street windows. They served roughly the same purpose as a screen credit on a film. They were acknowledgments given to employees for their work on the park. To fit in with the motif of a small town at the turn of the century, the names couldn't just be painted on the window. Instead, everyone was given a whimsical, fictional business that, in many cases, related to their contribution to the park or a hobby they enjoyed. If they were a photographer, chances are they worked for a photography company on Main Street. If they enjoyed fly fishing, then an outdoors company would be their trade. Each window became more imaginative than the last, allowing Walt to pay tribute to those that helped him and to breathe life into this fictional setting. I'll give you a few names and a little background on their windows. See if you can find them as you walk down Main Street. Earl Vilmer, consultant, Yucatan Engine Works, boiler and engine specialists, highest grade steam power. The word Yucatan should sound familiar from a few pages back. Earl was a transportation superintendent at Walt Disney World. He went to Mexico to purchase the trains currently running at Magic Kingdom. He also oversaw their restoration. Lazy M Cattle Company of Wyoming. Ron and Diane Miller and partners, Christopher, Joanna, Tamara, Jennifer, Walter, Ronald Jr., Patrick. Ron Miller married Walt Disney's daughter, Diane. Ron worked in the family business, eventually rising to CEO of Walt Disney Productions in 1983. Their partners are their children, in birth order. Christopher, Joanna, Tamara, Jennifer, Walter, Ronald Jr., and Patrick. Iwerks Iwerks, stereoscopic cameras. Ub Iwerks, Don Iwerks, repairs, modifications, no two exactly alike. If you love Mickey Mouse, one person to thank is Ub Iwerks. Ub was the hand behind the mouse and helped Walt cultivate the character we know and love. Ub was an amazing artist, as we see in the early Mickey Mouse short cartoons, and a technological genius. Walt and Ub met in 1919, and he was even an original partner in the Disney studio. Ub eventually left the studio and sold his shares back to the Disney brothers. Years later, Ub returned to the studio along with his son, Don. The Iwerks family has left a lasting imprint on the technology the Walt Disney Company uses in their parks. M.T. Lott, Real Estate Investment Subsidiaries. A friend in deeds is a friend indeed. Don Tatum, President. Tomahawk Properties, Latin American Development. I-4 Corporation, Bay Lake Properties. Reedy Creek Ranch Lands, Compass East Corporation. Leave it to the Disney Company to even have creative names for the shell companies they used to purchase the land for Walt Disney World. By utilizing these company names, rather than having the world know it was Disney buying up the land in Central Florida, they were able to keep the prices down. M.T. Lott sounds a bit like empty lot. I-4 sounds a lot like the major highway leading to Walt Disney World. I-4, Interstate 4. And Bay Lake Properties? Well, Bay Lake is the lake near the Magic Kingdom, behind the Contemporary Resort. After Roy O. Disney passed away, Don Tatum assumed the role of CEO and chairman of the board. Don was CEO until 1976 and stayed on as chairman of the company until 1980. There's another window along the same lines. Pseudonym Real Estate Development Company. See if you can spot it. Elias Disney, contractor, established 1895. This window is a tribute to Walt and Roy's father, Elias. Elias worked in many professions and trades, most of them with little to no success. Elias tried his hand at farming, being a letter carrier, owning a newspaper route, having an interest in a jelly company, and working in construction and carpentry. Dreamers and Doers Development Company, Roy O. Disney, Chairman. If we can dream it, we can do it. This window is a bit self-explanatory. It's paying homage to the other half of the dynamic Disney duo, Walt's older brother, Roy. As we know, after Walt's death, Roy postponed his retirement to see his brother's dreams through. Roy stayed on with the company and oversaw the creation and construction of what he named Walt Disney World. General Joe's building permits. General Joe's raconteur. Joe was a man Walt Disney was very fond of. Without Joe Potter, there would be no Walt Disney World today. This quote came from Dick Nunes, former president of Walt Disney Attractions. Dick has a window, too. Actually, his name pops up on two different windows. See if you can spot them. General Joe was an engineering genius, a graduate of West Point and MIT. In 1956, President Dwight D. Eisenhower appointed the good general. Joe was an Army Major General, governor of the Panama Canal Zone. During his tenure in this position, Joe was responsible for a community of over 40,000 people, along with overseeing the education, military, public health, medical care, fire and police protection, and postal system for the area. Joe retired from the military in 1960, and by 1965, he started his second act as the vice president of Florida Planning for the Disney Company. Joe is responsible for overseeing the construction of the infrastructure of the Magic Kingdom and developing the drainage canals across the entire property. And in case a window on Main Street wasn't enough, next time you take one of the ferries across the Seven Seas Lagoon to the Magic Kingdom, check the name of your ferry. You may just be traveling on the General Joe Potter. We've covered a few interesting windows, but you may be asking, where's Walt's window? Don't fret. Walt is obviously well represented. Next time you get your ticket scanned or use your magic band to gain admission to the Magic Kingdom, take a good look at the train station before you enter the park. You'll notice there's a window dead center. Walt Disney World. Railroad Office. Keeping dreams on track. Walter E. Disney, Chief Engineer. Back on Main Street, you'll notice another window for Walt. Open since 71. Magic Kingdom. Casting agency. It takes people to make the dream a reality. Walter Elias Disney, founder and director emeritus. See if you can spot one more with Walt's name on Main Street. Walter E. Disney, Graduate School of Design and Master Planning. Headmaster Richard Irvine Dean of Design, John Hench. Instructors Howard Brummett, Marvin Davis, Fred Hope, Vic Green, Bill Martin, Chuck Mile. One last little secret about the Main Street USA windows. It's a bit off to the side, but look for the windows that say voice and singing private lessons, music and dance lessons, ballet, tap and waltz. Linger around this area, maybe even grab a seat for a few minutes, and take a listen to the background. If you were successful in finding the windows mentioning the singing and dancing lessons, you shouldn't be too far from the Main Street Bakery. Take in a deep breath. How good does that smell? Throughout many locations, and even many of the attractions themselves, Disney uses something they created called a smellitizer to play with your senses. In July 1986, Robert McCarthy received a patent for a scent-emitting system, which uses a pump to launch smells up to 200 feet at the precise second Disney wants you to smell something. Disney can regulate the strength and intensity of the aroma they want you to enjoy. Here's an interesting blurb about it from Epcot Center Today, Volume 1, Number 2, 1981. Working with the Imagineers at WED Enterprises in California, Bob McCarthy has developed a smellitizer machine to add the aroma of everything from an erupting volcano in the Universe of Energy show to the tantalizing smell of a barbecue or the fragrance of orange blossoms. Each will be keyed to a particular show scene to enhance the realism of experiences in the future world and world showcase. WED designers are collecting scents from suppliers all over the world and blending them to produce the desired effect. So far, more than 300 odors have been tried, but more than 3,000 will be tested before the final choices are made. The Smellitizer operates like an air cannon, aiming the scent up to 200 feet across a room toward an exhaust system. Guests traveling on the moving vehicles will pass through the scene as the appropriate scent drifts across their path. Regulated by computer, the scent can be triggered for a fresh aroma just prior to each vehicle's arrival. If you would like to geek out about the Smellitizer, Google U.S. Patent 4603030A and read all about it. I hope you enjoyed the stroll down Main Street, USA. If you did, and you'd like to write home about it, feel free. You can find 2 turn-of-the-century mail collection boxes on loan from the United States Postal Service on Main Street. You can purchase postage stamps at the newsstand at the entrance to the park. Drop a postcard or a quick note to a friend or family member, telling them about all the fun they're missing out on. The United States Postal Service will deliver the letter to its destination. You're now at the end of Main Street, USA, standing in something called Central Plaza, also known as the Hub. Big decisions are made here thousands of times a day. Which way should we go? At the Hub, Magic Kingdom branches out, extending like spokes on a wheel. Which land do we whisk ourselves away to first? Do we visit pirates or ghosts, pay a visit to Peter Pan, or battle Zurg with Buzz Lightyear? As I said, big, big decisions. In our case, we're going to visit Buzz Lightyear and head over to Tomorrowland and work our way counterclockwise through the Magic Kingdom. But before we take a trip to the future, the past, and a few other stops in between, we have some unfinished business directly in front of us. Standing in the shadow of Cinderella's castle is the bronze partner's statue, depicting Walt Disney holding the hand of his famous creation, and some would say alter ego, Mickey Mouse. This is another popular spot to take a photo, since you're also able to get a shot of Cinderella's castle in the background. Speaking of the castle, let's chat for a minute or two about that beauty. Forced perspective is front and center here as well. So again, the upper part of the castle is constructed smaller than the lower portion, giving the illusion of the castle standing taller than it actually is. In keeping with Florida law, any structure above 200 feet requires a red light at the top. So Cinderella's castle tops out at 189 feet to avoid the light. While it appears that the castle is constructed of bricks, quite the contrary. Lots of steel, cement, plaster, and fiberglass give the appearance of a brickwork castle, and it took roughly 18 months to build. There's lots to absorb and appreciate when looking at the exterior of the castle. Marvel at the towers, 18 of them, and their corresponding spires, turrets, and gargoyles, 13 of them. Also, take a second look at the clock. Pay careful attention to the Roman numerals. See anything unusual with the number 4? Now, let's take a peek inside. Within the main castle corridor, check out the 5 handcrafted mosaic murals telling the tale of what else but Cinderella. The 5 murals are each 15 feet high and 10 feet wide and were completed by the renowned father-in-law and daughter team of Hans and Monica Scharf. These mosaics consist of 14 karat gold and silver, plus over 1 million pieces of glass in 500 different colors. A team of 6 people worked for more than 2 years to complete them. Notice the faces of Cinderella's stepsisters. As Cinderella tries on the glass slipper, you'll notice one sister has a red tint, as she's red with rage, and the other sister has a greenish tint, showing she's green with envy. These are great, subtle details in the storytelling. A portion of the castle is also home to Cinderella's royal table, which allows for a meal with a princess in an enchanting setting. before you go up to the second floor for your meal, via circular stairwell or elevator, look around the throne room and see if you can spot Jacques and Gus looking down at you. Once you've reached the restaurant, look around for the more than 40 coats of arms on display. Each coat of arms is an acknowledgement to a person who played a significant role at the Walt Disney Company. Reservations are highly recommended if you're considering dining here for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. There's one other exclusive place to see inside Cinderella's castle. Actually, perhaps a more appropriate word would be elusive, since reservations for this place are basically non-existent. The Cinderella Castle Suite affords those lucky enough with the opportunity to sleep like Cinderella in her dream suite. Since its debut in 2006, the only folks spending the night in this location have been contest winners or celebrities. Every so often, there have been tours available to the public to catch a glimpse of what it would be like to stay in this magical suite. A picture or two in this book wouldn't give the suite its due, so I won't even bother. Just Google it and let your daydreams and fantasies begin. Tomorrowland. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, and tomorrow is just a dream away. This optimistic quote is from the song for The Carousel of Progress, a stage show Walt Disney created for the 1964 World's Fair, which now runs all day long in Tomorrowland at WDW. The show tracks the progress and innovations that occurred for the average American family during the 20th century. The Carousel of Progress was one of Walt's favorite attractions as, at its core, it deals with advancing technology and the limitless possibilities that may be upon us in the future. Walt loved creating and being on the cutting edge of technology. He was certainly a bit of a futurist, which is a theme he wanted to bring into his theme parks. But even he knew portraying the future can be a Herculean task. As he once said, "The only problem with anything of tomorrow is that at the pace we're going right now, tomorrow would catch up with us before we got it built." Presenting a land of tomorrow sounds great on paper. However, as Walt's quote suggests, a major difficulty in dabbling in the future in physical form, like at a theme park, is to portray it tangibly and realistically each and every day. To capture the essence of the future, or what technology we would use tomorrow, would require constant updating in an effort to keep the concept relevant for an extended period of time. This is a problem Disney ran into over the years at both Walt Disney World and Disneyland. So the theming you encounter now in Tomorrowland at WDW is a bit different from when WDW opened in 1971. Today, you will enter a galactic spaceport of tomorrow, or more specifically, the future as seen from yesterday, where extraterrestrials, humans, and robots mingle. The theme and storyline are sort of retro-modern, with more of a sci-fi flair. It's a take on the early to mid-20th century science fiction. Think Buck Rogers or Flash Gordon meet Disney. Let's see which secrets and details we can uncover in the area. Walking into Tomorrowland from the hub, let's head over to Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger Spin. It will be on your right side. Join Buzz as he attempts to defeat the evil Zurg. Your goal here is to use your laser gun to hit as many of the Z targets as you can. Your score will be tallied on the digital dashboard of your space cruiser. The harder the Z target is to hit, the more points you will get. Here are a few pointers to help you to become a galactic hero. When you enter the first room, just as your laser blaster activates, quickly look down at the far side wall and see if you can spot the hidden Mickey. It's tough to spot, but there are two blue circles that make up the ears and a green circle for his head. If you can spot him, great! If not, don't look too long, as there are some big points ahead of you. Quickly rotate your space cruiser back toward the orangish robot and shoot the target on the inside of his left hand. Next, whip your vehicle around and hit the claw near the ceiling. These two targets are big points. In the next room, zero in on the volcano that is on the back wall, right side. The highest Z is worth 50,000 points. Try to hit that bad boy multiple times if you can. The next high-value target you should try for is the large Zorg on the right side. Look low on him for the Z target. It's worth 100,000 points. Be sure to keep your best game face on, as your picture will be taken during the battle. Definitely fast pass this attraction, as the standby times can be pretty long. Leaving Buzz Lightyear, let's head over toward the Astro Orbiter. You'll see the spaceships orbiting high in the sky, about 11 revolutions a minute, among constellations and planets. There's a lot going on around here at Rocket Tower Plaza. You can pilot a spaceship at the Astro Orbiter, grab a quick snack, or take a trip along the Tomorrowland Transit Authority in the People Mover, which is where we're heading. The People Mover is a great attraction on many levels. It's a good opportunity to get an aerial view of Tomorrowland. You'll get off your feet for a few minutes, and best of all, there's usually a very short wait, if any. When the attraction first opened in July 1975, it was called the Wed Way People Mover, Wed standing for Walter Elias Disney, and was based on the People Mover operating at Disneyland. There are a few interesting things to notice during your 10-minute trip. You're going to get a different view of Buzz Lightyear's Space Ranger spin, Space Mountain, if you're lucky enough to be on the People Mover when Space Mountain has a breakdown and the lights go on, you may get a cool view of the inner workings of the attraction, and of Mickey's Star Traders. You'll even pull alongside the architectural model for Progress City, Walt Disney's original concept for Epcot, and a driving motivation for the original plans for Disney's land in Florida. As you motor along, by the way, the People Mover is emission-free as it runs magnetically via linear induction motors. 533 electromagnets propel the People Mover along its 4,574-foot track. Keep a lookout for Disney's contemporary resort. The hotel was purposely built to be aligned as a background for Tomorrowland, a magical resort to stay in, and the only hotel that allows you to walk to the Magic Kingdom. If you listen closely during your ride, you may hear Mr. Tom Morrow being paged overhead. Yes, it's a cheesy pun on the word tomorrow, but it's also a nod to a character who was the operations director from a short-lived Tomorrowland attraction, Flight to the Moon, which was at both the Magic Kingdom and Disneyland. Lastly, if you have a sharp eye, when you pass by the scene for a futuristic hair salon, check out the woman's belt, and you'll find a hidden Mickey. Before we visit the Carousel of Progress and Space Mountain, and then head over to Fantasyland, there are a few quick things to note around the Rocket Tower Plaza. Head over toward the Merchant of Venus and look for a very large round ball known as a Kugel Ball or Kugel Fountain. This large granite ball, weighing several tons, is very easily moved, even by children. Behold the magic of physics and not Disney. According to an article titled Physics of the Granite Sphere Fountain from the American Journal of Physics, these fountains consist of a perfectly polished ball floating in a socket that fits precisely around it. The fluid that wells up around the rim of the socket is pumped into the fountain via a hole at its base. In spite of its considerable weight, the sphere is easily brought into a spinning motion. The fluid layer between the socket and sphere is very thin, thinner than a credit card, which is important for any Kugel on display in a public place, since it means there is no risk of children's fingers being caught under the spinning sphere. Not too far from the Kugel Ball, near the load area of the People Mover, close to the launching pad, is the Metrophone. Go over and try to make an intergalactic phone call, and listen closely. We learned a bit about Walt Disney's Carousel of Progress in the beginning of this chapter, so now's a good time to actually sit down and travel through the 20th century in about 20 minutes. I know what you're thinking. This really isn't about tomorrow. It's more about yesterday and sort of doesn't fit the theme of Tomorrowland. Well, you're right, but it has been a fan favorite for decades, and it's a 20-minute show in an air-conditioned building, which can be a welcome treat during the hot and humid summer days at WDW. There's rarely a long wait for the show, as it runs continuously throughout the day, and there are quite a few interesting secrets throughout, so let's head on in. As you enter the theater, if you really want to notice some of the minute details, obviously sit closer to the stage, but there really isn't a bad seat in the house. The show you're about to see is a bit different from the one that opened at the 1964 World's Fair in New York. The version of that show was created for the General Electric Pavilion as an effort to showcase the innovations coming from GE. After the World's Fair, the Carousel of Progress was featured at Disneyland from July 1967 to September 1973, and finally, in January 1975, the show debuted at Walt Disney World, featuring changes from its two prior incarnations. When the show begins, listen to the narrator, who also voices the father, John. He may sound familiar. It's Gene Shepherd, the narrator from the beloved movie A Christmas Story from 1983. In the first scene, note the young girl cranking the handle on the washing machine while Mom is ironing. You won't see her again. She's unnamed, unmentioned, and unseen throughout the rest of the show. During the 1920s scene, look out the kitchen window. If you look carefully, you'll see a sign with black letters on a white background that advertises Herb Ryman, attorney at law. In 1953, Walt Disney asked Herb to sketch out his dream for a theme park. During the course of a single weekend, Herb put Walt's dreams down on paper and illustrated what would eventually come to be known as Disneyland. In the 1940s scene, daughter Patricia pops up with a little magic during her exercise scene. As she's strapped into the shaker exercise contraption, look off to the right of it. There's a Mickey Mouse sorcerer's hat. The final scene has a lot to take in. There's a dry erase board on the wall next to the bulletin board. Check the saying on the board. There's often a witty message that changes from time to time, and it usually has something to do with the history of the attraction. As for that bulletin board just mentioned, look for the message that reads, Marty Called Once Changes. The Marty who is being referenced is the late Marty Sklar, who passed away in July 2017. Marty was the former vice chairman and principal creative executive of Walt Disney Imagineering. A young Marty got his start at Disney just a month before Disneyland opened in 1955. He rose through the ranks, eventually becoming the creative and driving force behind much of what we find across the Disney theme parks around the world. This little note is playing on the notion that the carousel needs some updating, since the last update to the attraction happened in the mid-1990s. While some may say it's very dated and a bit campy, the Carousel of Progress is a fan favorite, me included. There are a few other things to look out for during the ride. The final scene has a few hidden Mickeys below the Christmas tree and on the mantle. Here and there, you'll still see a GE insignia on an appliance. And take a good long look at John's face, maybe even snap a picture of it on your phone. John looks awfully similar to someone over at Epcot in the attraction Spaceship Earth. Pay attention during the Renaissance scene. It also seems as though the grandmother from the Carousel of Progress is pulling double duty and moonlighting over at the Haunted Mansion. In the first scene at the carousel, note grandmother sitting in a chair. She's wearing a shawl, has glasses on, and her hair is parted down the middle. When you take a trip over to the Haunted Mansion, notice that in the ballroom scene near the fireplace, the woman sitting there looks just like the carousel's grandmother. Get ready for blast off. Saving one of the more popular Tomorrowland attractions for last is the 183-foot-tall Space Mountain. There are no huge drops or inverted loops, and it doesn't go incredibly fast, 28.7 miles per hour, give or take a tenth of a mile, compared to other coasters. But it does feature lots of quick turns and small drops that aren't expected. This ride is all about the out-of-this-world theme and playing with your senses, as much of it is in the dark, with very little light. The concept for Space Mountain actually dates back to the days of Walt Disney in the early 1960s. However, the ride didn't come to fruition until January 1975. The logo Starport 75 makes reference to the year the attraction opened. During the planning and creation of the attraction, Disney hired former astronaut Gordon Cooper as a consultant. Cooper was a member of the Mercury 9 and Gemini 5 missions. Astronaut Cooper gave this ringing endorsement to the ride in the August 29, 1977 issue of People magazine. Space Mountain is about as close as you can safely get to actually being in space. Pretty powerful words from a man who orbited the Earth 22 times during his Gemini mission. While you're making your way through the queue before you board your rocket, look for a destination on a galactic map entitled Disney's Hyperion Resort. The word Hyperion is a reference to the Disney Brothers' early studio at 2719 Hyperion Avenue in Los Angeles. The cone-shaped structure of the building has a base diameter of 300 feet and could hold a small skyscraper in its interior, as it contains 4,508,500 cubic feet. Another fun fact, there are two tracks, Alpha and Omega. Alpha is 3,196 feet long, and Omega is 3,186 feet long. Once you're on the ride and you're ascending a hill, look for a spaceship suspended in the middle of the room. You'll see H-NCH, SM-1975 on it. This is a nod to legendary Imagineer John Hench, who was in charge of seeing that Space Mountain came to fruition. This attraction is a definite fast-pass ride. There is almost always a lengthy wait for standby. Riders must be 44 inches tall or taller, and those with back and neck problems should definitely think twice about their trip to space, as it can be a bit of an unexpectedly jarring and bumpy ride for some folks. Don't forget to smile, because you're going to have your photo taken. A trip to outer space can definitely make you hungry. Before you leave Tomorrowland and head into the land of fantasy, stop at the Cool Ship and grab a quick snack. You'll find it near the Tomorrowland Speedway. Look for the red ship titled Space Rangers. It's actually a reimagined ship from Disney's 1986 movie Flight of the Navigator. Fantasyland. Welcome to the land of fantasy, fairy tales, and make-believe. Many of Disney's most beloved attractions and legendary characters reside here. There's lots of ground to cover, so let's get right to it. When you stroll into Fantasyland from Tomorrowland, or for that matter, when you cross from one land into the other anywhere in the Magic Kingdom, you can actually see and hear the transition. The music will start to change, as will the decor, and before you know it, you're immersed in a new land. We are approaching Fantasyland from Tomorrowland for the convenience of keeping things linear in the book. But many folks prefer to reach Fantasyland by going straight down Main Street, USA, going through the hub, seeing the castle, and arriving smack dab in the middle of Fantasyland. Going this route puts you in the original portion of the land, which is complete with some of the favorite attractions that are synonymous with a Disney theme park. Taking this route is perfectly fine and logical. Over the years, Fantasyland has expanded and evolved to become more than what you see immediately around Cinderella's castle. The land even received two new castles in recent years, Beast's Castle and Prince Eric's Castle, but we aren't there just yet. Let's continue our stroll from Tomorrowland into Fantasyland. we will roll past the Mad Tea Party. Feel free to stop and spin for a bit, and then head off to the right, and you'll see the sign for the Storybook Circus. Go in and give your regards to Dumbo and Goofy. As a sort of subsection of Fantasyland, this area is themed around Dumbo and a big top or circus atmosphere. Just note the animal footprints and peanuts scattered on the ground as you stroll the area. The first ride on the right, as you enter, is Dumbo the Flying Elephant,